Dear Sandra, your son got some habits, I hope you don't undermine them. Especially with all the girls that's hurt inside this climate. You're a woman, so you know how it feels to be in alignment. With emotions, hoping a man can see you and not be blinded. Dear Dennis, you gave birth to a master manipulator. Even using you to prove who he is a huge favor. I think you should ask for more paper, and more paper, and more...
Welcome to Popcast Deluxe, your textured fringe with a blowout taper of weekly cultural review. I'm John Caramonica, a critic at the New York Times.
I'm Joe Coscarelli. I'm a reporter at the New York Times.
Joe, I know you, like me, had an incredibly busy weekend listening to Radical Optimism over and over and over again.
Yes. We're here to talk about all things.
Yeah, the real
Dua Lipa.
Look, the real loser of the Drake Kendrick battle is Dua Lipa.
Clearly. And Chance the Rapper, and who put out a song.
Sorry for you. Friday evening, like I was actually fully prepared to have a calm weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I really
didn't think this was going to happen.
I did, but not at this pace.
Okay.
Drake and Kendrick, as I'm sure you know, have had a incredibly hot, burning, deeply toxic exchange of songs over the weekend. We're recording this on Monday afternoon. Is this over? Like, I think, like, there was a chance we were going to record yesterday, and that would have not been the right call because it was not yet over yesterday. Correct. Is this over? Before we get into what happened, Drake puts out a song last night, The Heart Part 6.
Yes.
That came out around 9 o'clock East Coast time last night. Drake sounds fatigued. Frankly, sounds not well edited.
Yeah, yes.
Like, it's like, you know.
It was a cram session.
Karen could have taken a cut at that.
Yeah.
Get a couple hundred words out of it.
Yes.
Could have thinned it out.
Yeah.
But he sounds not defeated exactly, but he sounds tired, a little bit resigned.
He's taking his ball and going home.
Yes. Like, he is not introducing new narrative. He's fully existing within the narrative now.
And he's cutting off the next phase.
Potential angles.
I mean, he's like, Kendrick, I know you have 10 more songs for me.
Knock yourself out.
I'll see you after the vacation that I keep promising I'm taking and not taking.
Do you think that Air Drake is like on the tarmac, been waiting for like 4 days?
What is the sliding doors moment of, remember when For All the Dogs came out and Drake said his stomach hurt and that he was going to take a long break?
Well, that's what the medication.
what if he went off the grid 6 months ago?
we wouldn't be here now. Do you think it's over?
I do think it's over.
I don't think he's baiting Kendrick.
I definitely don't think he's baiting Kendrick, and we'll get into who was baiting whom when.
Mm-hmm.
That was a big part of this chess match, was bait, or the idea of bait, or retroactively claiming
and the
bait.
Idea of chess, frankly,
yeah.
As opposed to checkers.
Yeah, I don't think that's what this is. Drake sounds done. I think Kendrick might take a victory lap. I think Kendrick might dance in the end zone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think he might pass on Drake's body, as he said in the last. Mm-hmm. You know, not to just jump into like who won, but I don't even think that's going to be the substance of this conversation.
No.
Because the fight has been decided by popular vote,
and also like. Everyone won and nobody won.
Yeah.
I mean, that's like, I mean, it's an easy thing to say. I think my main takeaway of the last 48 hours, and we talked about this a little bit before recording. Also, I was texting with friend of the pod, Justin Charity, thinking a lot about fandom. And obviously, in the Stan War era, there really is like nobody's convertible, right? You're either on team A or on team B. The thing that I think I've realized in the last 48 hours is Drake fandom comes at different levels of fickleness, and some people are willing to be pulled off that. And I'm not saying they go full Kendrick necessarily, but they are willing to entertain. Maybe he's not the person that I thought he was with Drake, whereas most Kendrick fans are not willing to entertain that, despite Drake's allegations in Family Matters, which are quite serious.
And quite undermining to
the Kendrick project.
Right. Now, whereas the narratives about Drake are largely well-articulated, enduring popular narratives about him.
Yeah, like a tweet thread every 4 weeks about something that is roughly problematic about Drake. We've talked about in the past what Drake should be allowed to rap about or can't rap about. That's been litigated over and over again. Drake has more pressure points and in a battle, like obviously Kendrick has more to work with, but I would have thought that Kendrick has further to fall because people do put him on a pedestal, even though literally the subject of half of Kendrick's work is do not put me on the pedestal.
I'm an imperfect man.
I'm literally like, I'm not necessarily a great person, but I'm not a perfect person. And he's saying, especially on the last album, like, please don't do this to me anymore. If anything, it's alienating. It makes it hard for me to be on my actual self when everybody expects me to be perfect. So he's been saying that and people have been ignoring him. But Drake trying to weaponize alleged misbehavior against him, alleging that there was physical abuse in his relationship with his longtime partner, without receipts, it should all be said. Like,
everything in this is
a lot of stuff without receipts,
and way more of this beef is unverifiable than people want to act like.
But that's the thing. But because there is so much discourse about Drake and these kind of like casual tweet threads of like, here's a video of this, and here's a tweet this, and here's a people mistake that for proof.
Right. Overall, I think what we're seeing is a misunderstanding of the role that these artists play in our lives. You frame this in terms of fandom, but I actually think of it more in terms of hate. Mm-hmm. And I think Drake has essentially, after 10 plus years of uber popularity, more hate than any artist at his level, maybe ever.
Yes.
With the exception of
Taylor Swift.
No, I was going to say Michael Jackson, who interestingly has been a great through line in this beef, mm-hmm. and the subject of some of the best rapping from both guys, some mm-hmm. of the best metaphor and flips. You know, I'm Michael Jackson. No, you're Michael Jackson.
I'm Prince.
You know,
Prince.
What if you're Michael Jackson? You know, I thought Drake's use of that on Family Matters was a really nice continuation of that motif. But I think, you know, we talked about this last year when For All the Dogs came out. I called it Drake derangement syndrome. And I do think the distaste for Drake is so, so, so extremely personal to people. It's not enough for him to be a run-of-the-mill rapper misogynist. He has to be a serial predator. It's not enough for him to be corny or appropriative. He has to be an active ruiner of other people's sounds and careers. Like, he,
or racially not ambiguous, but the weaponizing of Rick Ross continually calling him white boy, and the sort of his narrative about do I belong, like putting that narrative on Drake of does he belong, does he not belong, can he say certain things, can he not say certain things, weaponizing that very early in this battle, which I think seems to have gotten under Drake's skin.
And I do think what Kendrick did most effectively in all of these songs, and we'll get to a breakdown mm-hmm. of the sort of the back and forth, I think what he did was he took existing narratives, pressure points about Drake, and he expressed them in a way that only Kendrick Lamar can, with very intricate rhymes, with very
quintuple?
Intense storytelling.
Octuple
entendres. And
get it, just as a timeout, we talked about this previously. A lot of y'all are reaching.
So many reaches. The whole, all of rap fandom has become the True Detective Reddit from season one. You know, like everything.
A lot of reaches. Anyway, I don't want to belabor it, but it is just
yes. I mean, rap is
Did
not.
Did you know Joe was also born on June 16th?
It's true. 616 in Fairfield, New Jersey. That's where I was born. Did you know that?
I did not know that. Love that. Should I say that explains a lot? The New Jersey to Florida pipeline.
I mean, it's
it's real.
Basically the same place.
It's extremely real.
But I think Kendrick was able to play the notes that people wanted to hear.
Yes.
But in such an elaborate way, because he's that kind of writer and that kind of rapper, mm-hmm. that it worked on so many levels. And like, he played the crowd perfectly. And that's why public opinion, you know, who knows how accurate the polling is. Look, we looked at Instagram a lot. We looked at Twitter a lot, X, whatever you want to call it. You see the conversation in the rap media podcast ecosystem. Mm-hmm. Nobody's really calling this for Drake, right?
No.
Like,
it does not seem that way.
It doesn't seem that way.
I think even Drake low-key is not calling this for Drake because of the tone of what he put out
last night. And it was really interesting. One of the last things he said was, oh, I would really like that last song you put out because I can dance to it if you weren't calling me a predator over and over and over again. But I think Kendrick won on Kendrick's level in terms of intricacy and chess. And I think Kendrick won on Drake's level in terms of
hits
and internet moves.
Yeah.
And that puts Drake in a really tough position. Now, when you're talking about the quality of the songs themselves, I do think with some distance, especially if things like the claim that Drake had a fake daughter, did he or not plant that information? Either way, seems to not be true. I would be very surprised if it turns out to be true. And that's a big part of one of the main pieces in this.
But does
this
that what matter?
I'm saying. But this is what I'm saying. In hindsight, when we compare the quality of these songs, I think it might end up looking a lot like Jay and Nas, which that battle was called for Nas.
Yeah.
Pretty
at the moment.
Decidedly.
Yeah.
You listen back to those songs.
No, I agree.
I mean, I think that could be where we land with
Interesting.
And we can talk about how we feel about these individual records on a purely musical level.
Okay.
Later.
Can we just run through briefly? Let's just do the list of the songs and then we'll talk more detail, but let's just do the list.
Okay.
Should we go back to before this weekend or you?
Yeah, I can start at the beginning.
Okay. Well,
first person shooter. We'll start there.
So we got to go to last year.
Right.
This is on For All the Dogs. First person shooter.
And Kendrick seems to indicate at some point in this last week that he was asked to be on this song, that it was supposed to be the three of them. Drake doesn't really say anything notable on this song, certainly not about Kendrick Lamar.
No.
But J. Cole compliments the three of them and says, we're the big three.
Group hug.
Yeah.
That also the edits, the wrestling edits and guys, everybody did great. Should we just say everybody did great this weekend?
Everybody
the memes,
made
the videos.
So much content.
I know.
But yeah, the J. Cole memes, the like Drake says the most heinous thing in the world. And Kendrick says the most heinous thing in the world. J. Cole is a Labrador retriever with a butterfly landing on its nose like that. Yeah, that's
J. Cole is sipping out of a podcast mug on the Zazzle store. For podcast
history, we can all agree will look kindly on J. Cole being like, you guys have fun.
I'm more convinced than ever that Drake called Cole and was basically like, it's about to go nuclear, like with love.
The
like,
last report I saw was that Schoolboy Q called J. Cole.
Oh, really?
And was like, hey,
get out of this. Yeah. Okay. Well, someone called J. Cole and was just literally like, you don't want this.
And J. Cole knew.
Of course he knew.
He had the pit in his stomach when he laid down to go to sleep.
Yes, he knew in his heart, but like I'm sure someone told him, like, you want no part of this.
Yeah, he wanted an exhibition game, and Kendrick claims he wanted an exhibition game, but these guys jumped immediately to opposition research, which I think is really what happened here, and we'll get to that.
Right, so okay. First-person shooter, then...
Like that.
This is on the Metro and Future album. We don't trust you. First one, I guess just a party sitting in the studio or just hanging out and just being like, you know what I hate?
Drake.
I hate that guy. What if we just made a whole ass album about it?
Two.
Right. Well, we have so many songs. We'll make two albums. You know who probably hates Drake? Kendrick. Let's just call. You think he's free? He's around, right? Call Kendrick. So Like That comes. And
do you think Kendrick was spoiling for this fight, or was he just doing the normal thing?
I think he was doing the normal. I mean, he thought he was doing Control.
The thing that he does every couple years where he's like, you guys are all right, but I'm the best. And
I think he thought he was doing control.
Let's spar about it.
You know, control to me, I'm not even sure it's a great verse at this point.
Oh, no.
No, no, no. But it's like you have to like account for like foaming at the mouth moment. Rap Twitter.
Yeah.
And just being like, sure. It's the most meaningful blah, blah, blah. And it's like, no, it's like a guy. It's like, again, it's the fist. It's the, it's that. It's very, very, it achieved what it meant to achieve, which is to get people discoursing and setting Kendrick apart from that discourse. That's what that verse is designed for.
More than a decade ago.
Yes. And that's what it is. It been that long?
I think it's 2013, right?
Come on.
Which is crazy because that's only 1 year after Drake brings Kendrick on tour to open for him.
Also, Big Sean still putting out records somehow after getting absolutely assassinated on his own song. But to me, this was just Control 2.
But this is a much better song than Control with a much better impact as a song. That's right. That's the thing that...
With hitmakers.
This is Kendrick Lamar matching, being like, okay, I'm going to get on a Future song, which is unlikely in the first place, and I'm going to make a verse that people want to hear where they play Future songs, aka in the club or in the car. Mm-hmm. So it works on that level. And I do think if this song would have came and went like Control, Drake wouldn't have felt the need to get in. But all of a sudden, this is encroaching on his territory because this is a number one song. This is a number one Hot 100 smash that is going to be certainly now one of the defining songs
of Kendrick's career
and of the year.
Yes.
In all genres. Mm-hmm. So that's why I think eventually Drake is like, all right,
I gotta step up.
We're gonna do this beef thing again.
Okay. But who comes next?
Are you talking about Rick Ross?
No, I'm talking about J. Cole.
Oh, J. Cole. Yeah. 7 minute drill.
Just then retreats back into the hedges.
But he still had the best idea. He still had the right idea of how to go about this, which is like your music's all right, but it's not that good.
made a song lightly complimenting his foe.
I do think a lot about you fell off like The Simpsons.
It's a really weird. Like, I don't know. I don't watch The Simpsons. The Cole thing, then the Ross, then Ross?
No, I guess Push-Ups came out.
Push-Ups,
first.
Then Ross. Yeah. So Drake comes out with Push-Ups, and this is like, at this point, this is a full 3 weeks after. Like that?
Yeah, this is more. Weeks? More. Yeah, this is mid-April.
Yeah.
And like that was like March 22nd.
So like what's in it for Drake? Like, do you think at this point, and again, we'll get more in the weeds, but do you think at this point Drake is like, I've given it enough time. It's a one blow victory. I'm going to put this out and it's done.
No, I think he knew that he was starting an actual back and forth. But the thing that Push-Ups is doing that even the next Drake song, which we'll talk about, mm-hmm. not counting the AI Tupac Snoop Dogg troll, which I do think might have upped the stakes
a bit.
But I think push-ups was like, okay, everyone is talking trash about me. I can't just do nothing. Mm-hmm. This album is huge. These future albums are huge. Kendrick is likely going to launch an album off of talking about me, you know, like I have to fight. Mm-hmm. And a lot of this is egged on by the internet. I will say one of the things we learned in this beef is that both of these guys are reading everything you post about them.
Yeah, that's true.
And everything you post about the other one.
But also we knew that about Drake.
Sure.
But we didn't know that about Kendrick.
And we totally ourselves, and I think Drake would say this as well, underestimated his savviness and how much he wanted to play in this digital way.
Do you think that it is Kendrick himself, or do you think that Kendrick just has someone next to him whose job is basically being his in-house Drake
comments? Think they print out the tweets like Trump and then he writes on them with Sharpie?
Yeah, basically, yeah. Serious question.
I would like to know.
Like, does Kendrick have a burner account?
I bet he does. Well, we saw, like, he does have the Finsta where he posted the push-ups video.
Oh, right. Yeah. Okay.
His public Finsta. Yes. So I think, yeah, I think both these guys were doing a lot of scroll. I think the screen time notification next Sunday is going to be like, your screen time was up
23 hours. 100%.
Yeah.
Okay. So after push-ups, is this TaylorMade Freestyle?
Yeah, TaylorMade Freestyle.
Or the Ross thing.
We'll leave Rick Ross out of this.
TaylorMade Freestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
which was Drake saying, like, where are you? Like, this is another thing that sort of, like, looking back, maybe this was a false step.
You think that
if he's saying you're taking too long.
Right. But, I mean, it was just funny, given that he took 3 weeks.
Sure, but I would say the difference is, like, that was not a direct, it wasn't a diss song. It was a verse with subliminals. In
semantics.
I think the back and forth actually starts with push-ups.
Yes. No, that's fair. Okay, so TaylorMade Freestyle, and then...
Well, TaylorMade Freestyle will say also, he's saying, you're not dropping because Taylor Swift is dropping, which becomes relevant. Not on the first Kendrick response, but on the second Kendrick response. So we'll get there.
After that is Euphoria.
Yeah. So Euphoria really... came out last Tuesday. Man, yes. Were we ever so
and
young.
Euphoria is going to be the number one song in the country this or Tommy Richmond. Also, how crazy would have been if one of them rapped over the Tommy Richmond song?
There was a lot of different paths.
Missed opportunity here. Just wanted to say. Yeah. So Euphoria, that is 6 days ago. Feels like about 9 months ago.
Right. What did you think of Euphoria when it came out, not knowing what was going to happen after? This is a 3-part song. You know, it starts slow. Kendrick sort of saying, like, we don't have to do that. You know, like, don't lie on me. I know what you're going to do.
I know what you're going to do. I won't tell the truth. You don't lie about me. I won't tell the truth about you. And then it pivots
angrier and angrier.
Like, I think about you all the time and you make me miserable. I wish you didn't exist.
Yeah.
I thought that I like this as a song, and I also like it because to me it makes sense in the Kendrick catalog. It actually feels like it's of a piece with earlier great Kendrick songs. He's doing character work. It's not like he's doing character work the way that Drake was doing character work with AI. Kendrick character work historically is multiple versions of himself, competing narratives about himself, talking to each other. This is Kendrick being like, I'm gonna the Incredible Hulk. Like, I could be this guy, but don't push me. I could become this guy and I might become that other guy. And you don't want any parts of that other guy. This is a classic Kendrick type song that I thought was effective in needling Drake.
I found it at first, my first reaction was perfunctory. I really didn't think everyone was I feel like the overwhelming response to this online was, ooh, he hates Drake. I know he says literally that he hates Drake, but like you can hear it. Like he's mad at everything this guy stands for. And I was sort of like, like it sounds like he knows he has to respond. With hindsight, I think that some of that was intentional. I think the like, am I going to go there-ness of this song tonally as well as lyrically was on purpose. But I don't want to listen to the song. I
don't think it's the best of all these Kendrick songs. And I don't think it's the worst. I think songs that follow this are not as effective.
The some of the decisions he's making vocally always been challenging for me with Kendrick.
Mm-hmm.
The way he's using his voice in the second section of this song, I find it grating.
Yeah.
I know he's doing some of that on purpose. Mm-hmm. It's long. It's quite long. Which
have you listened to Kendrick Lamar?
Yeah. Look, If it was going to go push-ups, this Drake response, Kendrick response, like I didn't think he had a lot to stand on, but that is not what he was doing here.
No, but what's also, but I will say the middle section of this song, the I hate section.
Borrowed from a DMX interview. DMX,
yeah. To me, I don't know if it's great rapping, but it shows, this is where the thing pivots to me.
Yeah.
This is where it pivots from, I'm a guy who makes rap songs. It's like saying some kind of like ungenerous things about a peer. And this is where it pivots into like, I literally have been sitting on this animus for so long, even if it's performed animus, sure. But it is, it's a warning flare of saying like that anything that follows from this point forward is rooted in this degree of animus. It's not like I have bars for you. It's, I literally wish to like undermine you as a human being.
Well, and it activates the main Drake insecurity, which is that he's not welcome. Neither authentically black nor authentically hip hop.
Yes. And that he's not welcome. This is the thing. Part of Drake's proposition is that he's flexible, he's fluid, he's welcome in any city, in any style, in any scene. He's a keen listener, he's a keen adopter and absorber of styles.
Which all gets used against him in the course of
which
this
is
battle.
Like for years, if you are pro Drake, you say this is why Drake is so good.
Yeah,
he's an effective absorber and regurgitator,
a synthesizer
of a number of different approaches. He's brought any number of like subcultural or regional styles into the mainstream.
And can really rap.
And can rap in a number of different ways. Yep. The funny thing is, and this side thing, but like hearing him a little bit try to rap in a Kendrick mode during later in this battle, and like actually that's like maybe one mode he can't totally rap in. It's like you rap in most modes, but that's a signature kind of thing. Wait, where did we just get cut off?
we're talking about Euphoria and where Euphoria is going. He's touching on these.
Right. So it to me, the middle part of Euphoria is where you know the battle is going to be very different. Because if Drake responds, he can't just respond in a kind of play fighting way. He actually has to assert himself. And it's not that Drake's never asserted himself before. There's any number of like tough Drake songs over the course of his catalog. There's any number of like, how dare you come for me songs at various points in his catalog. But I don't think he's ever been addressed by a peer this disrespectfully. And I think all this stuff to your point before, it's all on the internet.
Sure.
It's totally on the internet. Any number you can, any day, look on Twitter, people say things like this about him. But it's another thing if Kendrick, who you took on tour and who you theoretically are a peer of, although as I've said on a prior episode, I don't ever think that they were fully peers. I don't think they do the same thing.
They might be now.
Well, this is, which is an unexpected, that's a chess move that I don't think Drake was ready for. And I think we'll get to that at the end. Okay. So anyway, Euphoria.
Then he gets back-to-backed, which
is crazy.
Should have seen coming.
But it's actually wild. And I think we all were very surprised.
And Kendrick does it tellingly.
616 in LA.
On Instagram. He's like, I'm coming to your house.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, probably he couldn't get the sample cleared because it's an Al Green song. Mm-hmm. Featuring the playing of Drake's uncle. And that's where we start to get these Easter egg conspiracy theories. This is all the things he meant. This is where the reaching starts. And this is where
Zach Bia catches a good stray.
Is Zach Bia going to respond? He's on the clock.
Zach Bia is on the clock. This to me, go ahead, but like, no, this to me is the least effective of all the songs. This is like, you talk about having like a limitation with Kendrick is what it does for you. Like the thing that I kept returning to, and sort of in a funny way, I was like, this is a real cannibal ox ass flow. And I say this as a person who like loves the cold vein. It's like, I'm not dismissing it, but I do think there is something when Kendrick goes into that particular register that's like intricate and also slightly detached from the beat. Like it's kind of like post-rhythmic in a way. It's not exactly in the pocket. It's like it's like aware of the pocket and then it walks away from the pocket and it dances somewhere else, always keeping loose mind of where the pocket is. This is, to me, the most, this is the toughest record to listen to.
Even tougher than Meet the Grams, which we'll get to.
Okay. So no, but I think this is important.
Yeah.
So this is, to me, is the least catchy record.
Well, he starts with abstract poetry. He does. But, he says, "I never thought I'd hear in a diss song, I live in the circadian rhythms of a shooting star."
Me too, fam.
Like. So, but he does an important thing here tactically, mm-hmm. which is the second half of the song. He switches modes and he says, "I have a mole in your operation."
Right.
All your friends, they're
not your friends.
You. Like, oh, you're paranoid, Drake, now? You're right to be paranoid. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. you're not even paranoid on the right levels. Mm-hmm. Like, you're paranoid on this level. Look at the guy next to you. Mm-hmm. Look at the guy next to the guy next to you. They're feeding me information. And this has been a through line.
Or are they?
This has been a through line since the Weeknd dissed Drake on the second Mutual album. How could I be scared of you? You got mm-hmm. leaks in your operation. Mm-hmm. There's this sense that Kendrick, again, true or not, baited by Drake or not, the idea that Kendrick saw the whole field and moved accordingly is why he won this beef beyond the music, beyond the lines.
And it's also because it's not simply that he did that, it's that no one expected him to do that.
Yes.
This is like, I do think a lot of the reaction to who's winning or who's in advance really has a lot to do with what are your expectations of this person. Mm-hmm. And I think because people didn't think Kendrick was a gamer, like right. not in this way.
Yeah.
Like he might have been like, I'm the best rapper, but yeah. there's a difference between I'm the best rapper and I've been collecting dirt on you for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks, potentially months, potentially years, in order to absolutely ether you in your own house.
Yeah.
That's different.
Yeah.
No one expected that of Kendrick. So he gets a tremendous amount of credit for the chasm between what people thought he would do and what he actually did.
Yes.
Whereas Drake
basically lived up to exactly what you thought
Drake
he was
going
to do.
Drake.
Yeah.
Drake did Drake. And if anything, Kendrick also did Drake.
Yes.
He backed. He also made hits, which we'll get to.
So this also sets up there's the lo-fi cover art for this. It's a Maybach leather glove. Mm-hmm. It's like on a pattern. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know it's supposed to be meaningful. You don't know what it is. You get some reaches on the internet. I think all those people were quite wrong about what it was he was hinting at. But he's playing into the game. He's saying, here's a piece of the puzzle. You don't see the whole puzzle yet, but remember this mm-hmm. piece. Mm-hmm. And he's setting up everything he does next. What we find out, that's Friday afternoon. What we find out Friday night is that Drake had been preparing, almost over-preparing.
All week,
maybe longer.
Yeah.
Drake had been shooting a music video.
Like a double documentary.
A music video. Yeah. Right? So it's nearing midnight on the East Coast. Mm-hmm. The chatter among the vloggers. Drake's going to drop. Mm-hmm. First, it's on Instagram. Oh, actually, there's an in-between thing here, which is the teaser on Instagram is the Buried Alive interlude parody.
Oh, did that actually come first?
Yeah. So that was in the post. It was simultaneous.
Oh, okay,
it was on the post where Drake said, go watch the Family Matters YouTube video.
I also want to say that song is underappreciated as part of the whole thing.
I agree.
And that's as close as he does get to rapping like Kendrick.
Yeah, where he literally mimics Kendrick's appearance on Take Care, which to me is the only bad part of Take Care. Like that's one of the worst verses in mainstream rap of the last like 15 years. So Drake making fun of it was appealing.
Yeah.
Family Matters YouTube video.
Crushing the Good Kid Mad City van or not, depending
right.
if you follow car Twitter. Car Twitter saying it's not the same car. I can't speak on that.
Right. Yes, it's a symbolic version
yes.
of the Good Kid Mad City mm-hmm. van. This is a three-part song. Mm-hmm. Another mistake I think Drake makes here is that he goes after everyone again.
I don't agree that that's a mistake, but okay.
Why? Because you think it draws attention to the fact that it was an unfair fight?
No, because I think that it's an opera. Look, in order to win a battle, you have to win a battle. And part of winning a battle is going to Rocky and being like, I just killed you. Going to Ross and being like, I killed you. Going to whoever, Metro or whatever, and saying, I killed you. Like, that's part of it. So I think on the path from Drake wanting to be the ultimate champion of the Royal Rumble, right? I do think along the way, you have to take all the sort of like secondary players and dismiss them. And like we were joking previously about Metro just getting one ball, like half a bar in right. something, which he eventually takes advantage of later this week. But to me, I think taking on quote unquote Rocky and Ross and then dismissing them, they're never going to respond. That's an easy, it's an easy victory on the way to theoretically the bigger victory. Now,
Kendrick never took his eye off of.
No, of course. But also there is no one else fight. For Kendrick to look at.
Right.
For all of Kendrick's fans who say he is the best rapper and he is the most talented and the most gifted and most decorated and Grammy Award winning and Pulitzer Prize winning and all this other stuff.
Happy Pulitzer Day, John.
Is today Pulitzer Day? It's a wild day to have Pulitzer. Happy Met Gala Day. Pulitzers, Met Galas.
Kendrick's going to win again.
For this weekend. Right now, they're giving it to him.
You're going to be like, meet the Grams. That's writing.
I mean, we disagree, but that's fine. So I think Drake had to do it. Like, for all the thing about he should have been laser focused on Kendrick, at that point, for better or worse, it's still a 20-v-1. And I don't think that Drake is wrong to and just be like, you deserve four bars. And then you'll never, I mean, Rocky will respond.
Nobody will hear it.
But we're a year from now. Or what someone said he'll respond with an outfit.
Right.
You know?
Drake said that, basically.
Yeah. So, like, Ross is going to respond with an IG story.
Yeah.
But I do think that Drake had to do that to foreclose upon those response opportunities.
The other thing we learn for good on this song while he's going through the ranks, Future One. Future One.
Absolutely.
Drake is like, Future, not even mad at you.
I love you.
You got used, yeah. But I'm not mad at you.
Yeah, he's like, literally, I love.
Future came Speaking out of
did
this.
You see the video of allegedly Travis Scott like dancing on like a Greek island yesterday?
Another person who gets to play all sides with absolutely. No consequences.
Oh, we should do a whole segment on like everybody, like the Kanye. No one cares.
but you know.
I know.
Like, Kanye doesn't love that.
Of course not. But, like, I mean, it's very telling. I mean, this is also about generational tension,
sure.
Obviously. And, like, everybody who's mad at each other is
old,
respectfully on the way out.
Yeah.
And Kanye is further out than this generation.
Yeah.
They're not worried about him.
Yeah. Jay-Z, they too. Should be Jay-Z, too, is, like, you know, monocle
Jay-Z
on. Just sort of
has
like,
Jay-Z listened to all these songs? I'm not sure.
Yeah, no, not yet. He's getting the printed out digest so he can write
they
on it.
He should be worried about Ian.
Yeah.
So
Family Matters. The third verse of Family Matters.
This is...
This might be the best music in the beef.
Yes, it's up there. Yes, it's among the best music.
And
for sure.
It's Drake playing his card, his Oppo research card, which I do. I think we should do a little detour here
into the history of Oppo research.
We don't have to do the full history, but I do think Pusha T ruined rap beef. I think when we were growing up, different times, but overlapping.
Okay, daddy.
Rap beef was about saying something really mean and juvenile about your opponent and threatening them with physical harm.
That's certainly was part of it. Yes.
And amusement.
Okay.
And Pusha T, not the first to do it.
No, that's why I'm saying I don't think
breaks such a big story via song.
He should have gotten the Pulitzer.
With Story of Adidon. Yeah, he should have gotten the Peabody, you know, like, that I think Drake, especially the victim of that, feels like that's the only way to win a rap beef in the internet era. Now we're talking,
but
back, you know, we're talking about
Jay and Prodigy.
That's an accent mark.
I actually don't know.
Putting up a picture of Prodigy doing ballet like, as a child.
Dance as a child.
Or modern dance. Ballet, modern. Who recalls?
It's real So You Think You Can Dance hours. But that is oppo research.
50 calling out the fact that Rick Ross was a corrections officer. But these were not the reason these songs existed.
No, but they did change the tenor and tempo. Like, this is like, I don't know that the Pusha thing is as radical a shift as I think you're proposing. Because I agree that
I'm saying the reaction to it is what is radical. Which maybe. Is that this is the only way you can destroy someone is if you pull out their deepest, darkest secret. Basically.
It's also tough because we live much more in an age of information right now. Like, yeah. We live in the age of 1090 Jake. Like, we live in the age of everybody trying to have receipts and screen grabs and who liked what comment and who unfollowed who, what screen, did you save the screen grab of the thing from 10 years ago so that you can weaponize it today? I hope everybody's still paying for their iCloud storage so they can have all their old screen grabs. It's a different era. So I just think it's of the era, but I don't know that it's specifically changed the tone of rap beat, because to me, what Jay did to Prodigy fundamentally realigned the tenor of that particular moment in tension. And I think that, frankly, most rappers aren't famous enough to be Summer Jam screened.
Mm-hmm.
Like now everybody's kind of famous.
Right.
Everyone can be Summer Jam screened.
The thing that Pusha did effectively to Drake was, it wasn't just, I have this embarrassing piece of information about you. He threaded it through with these same, with a biographical reading, basically a psychological dissection that then, you know, in a sort of three act structure results in Drake hiding a child. Mm-hmm. And I think Drake used, again, unverified, the Kendrick information, the idea that he
is abusive or has been abusive, allegedly, to his partner, in at a former partner.
Attempts to use it in a similar way, which is to say, you present yourself as this black messiah with a black family, but really you're doing this, which Kendrick rapped about on his album, and then you're doing this, which nobody knew about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that Drake thought that was it. He ends the song saying, you're dead.
And honestly, the thing that I have been most surprised about in this entire back and forth is that people are willing to believe anything about Drake and people are not willing to believe anything about Kendrick.
Yes.
And we say that not having proof of anything. But it's like, if you're willing to extend to Kendrick the grace that the things that he's saying are true, which seem to not be the case, especially with the alleged daughter, which we'll get to, but no one wants to extend that grace to Drake, number one. And because the information that Drake is putting in the world, also that potentially one of his children is not fathered by him, which
but by his manager,
unverified, we don't know anything. Maybe
these guys said crazy things about each other. I don't want to lose sight of that.
I mean, we don't want to and also, I mean, I think one of the main takeaways today, Monday, is like, people are exhausted. People feel a little gross. You definitely saw like an older generation on Twitter who, like, closer to my age, basically be like, this is like on the verge of getting physical. Like, this is on the verge of getting IRL. Like, let's hope it doesn't do that.
Right.
And the reason people feel that is because of the nature of the revelations. Now, that said, when people are beefing with each other, people say crazy things about each other.
That's the other thing. The fact checking back and forth, I don't need that either. In the same way, I don't need the opposition researcher. I don't think that should be the gold standard of what you're trying to do. I don't think that's a trump card. I don't think that's an ace in a hole necessarily, unless you use it particularly well. Mm-hmm. I was listening back last week to Cameron dissing Jay-Z. He calls him 38 years old, 36 years old, 42 years old, all in the same song. It doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't have
First
to
of all,
be true.
I just want to say, that's possible.
To be all those ages. Is it possible to wear sandals with jeans and be the king of New York?
No. Not even in 2024. I have to say, candidly, not even in 2024.
I just mean, like, the hyperbole used to be part of this. And now you have not only the fans, but the artists being like, well, actually, the age of consent is.
But don't you think that that's just a logical response to how beefs are litigated? Because
it's so over literal now.
But it's like when Jay did the Prodigy thing.
Yep.
There were not multiple media outlets to, you know, I mean, obviously you had the rap magazines and whatever, but it's like, it was as close to kind of like state-sponsored radio as you could get.
Yeah. That photo doesn't even really exist.
Right, but at the time, it was literally like the most famous rapper took someone who was not the most famous rapper, exposed them.
Yeah.
And there was
imagine pushback. Jay using a copy machine.
Like you went to Kinko's or something. It was like, I'll blow this on a CD-ROM.
Yeah. Ty went to Kinko's.
Put a CD-ROM and they went to
a floppy disk.
They went to Meadowlands and like put it in the thing and said, can you make this big? Like it was like that.
We need an oral history of how they got Prodigy's childhood dance photo on the summer film screen.
Yeah. I don't know. To me, it feels like a logical response to how information is processed.
It takes a lot of the fun out of it, though, I will say, for me.
Well, that's why, I mean, I will say, this beef was fun until it wasn't fun. And when I first heard the back end of Family Matters, like, obviously, immediately, you feel like you're witnessing a thing that you wish you had not seen. You either one of two things is true. Either the thing that Drake is saying is accurate, and you've just done irreparable damage to
a man and his family.
Yeah, and a man and his family. Or Drake's lying and talking about abuse in such a casual way to minimize like the actual conversation around abuse. Neither of those feel good to. But I remain completely surprised that here we are on Monday afternoon and people are basically like, Kendrick won. And
doesn't matter what
48 hours ago or 70, however many hours ago, the main takeaway was Drake said this horrific thing about Kendrick and his family. And everybody was like, really?
The reason, one of the reasons that got so pushed aside is what happened.
AI.
What happened less than 30 minutes later.
Yes.
Which is Kendrick releases a track that is roughly 10 times darker.
Man. We disagree on this. I really like this song. I mean, and when I say like, it's not like,
yeah, you're
like,
not going to put on Meet the Grams on your way home tonight.
No, I'm not playing it for pleasure.
Yeah.
To me, this is a great diss record. This is, I'm addressing your son and saying how terrible of a father you are. I'm addressing your mother and saying how terrible of a son you are, addressing your father and telling him how terrible he must have been to raise a person like you. I'm addressing your daughter. That's where it gets a little wonky. But like, I'm addressing your daughter and saying that daddy has forgotten about you and neglected you, and I'll take care of you, or I'll like, I'll look out for you.
Sociopath. We can agree on.
I absolutely agree. Sociopathy. But like, I honestly, it's so pure. It's really, I mean, tell me you've never had beef with someone and like wished to say something to their loved ones about the real person they were. Because I promise you, I've had that thought.
Here's my problem.
I haven't written the song, but I've had the thought.
Have you written the poem?
I might have written half the email.
This is Kendrick at his most theatrical. Mm-hmm. And this is Kendrick at his most
always theater. This is the thing.
But this is like, this is creative writing 601. You know what I mean? This is Iowa MFA workshop. MFA Kendrick. This is like, this man thinks that he is Shakespeare. Like when he's writing this song, like he thinks like he's doing this like with a quill, you know what I mean? Like, and it also has this tone again, purposeful. And he is a writer. He knows how he is writing. It's this, he recommends him ayahuasca. He tells this imaginary 11-year-old child
very powerful
that she's loved. like just the pure condescension, you know, the like,
I love it. Kendrick, I genuinely love
Kendrick
it.
Is always telling us that he is not perfect, and he is always telling us how enlightened he is. And I'm just like, this is like, also him, he's basically, he's defending all women against all predators.
Mm-hmm.
Drake flips that on him later. Mm-hmm. You know, this mm-hmm. is like this, I can't listen to this.
Okay.
I can't take it seriously.
I take it
because we went from a level of, it's the work, like it's very literal for something that is also so theatrical.
But it's also like, look, you have to understand this beef, to the extent that it started as I'm the best rapper. It's Kendrick saying I'm the best rapper. It's not the big three. It's just Big Me.
Yep.
And this is Kendrick saying I'm the best rapper. I'm using those skills to say, not that you're the worst rapper, but that you're the worst person, right? It's weaponizing the I'm the best rapper narrative. And it's actually saying, you know how good a rapper I am? Not only can I beat you with bars, but I can use those bars to beat you with condescension, disgust, and distaste.
Everything I said about my distaste for this as a song, totally trumped by it as a strategic move. This song is why Kendrick Lamar
won.
This is the knockout. It comes 30 minutes after an extremely elaborate, extremely well constructed, extremely fun and scary and uncomfortable Drake diss that he thought he had it. And Kendrick said, not only whether he knew Drake was writing this song or not, he knew the angle. He said in the first track.
Yes, he said, I know everything.
I know you. I can even predict your angle.
Talking about Family Matters.
Named your song Family Matters. Mm-hmm. It's Meet the Grams.
Yep.
It's flawless.
Now,
as strategy.
Now, here's where it's lacking, to the degree that it's lacking. I would say at this point, Kendrick has released 3 songs in a row, including Euphoria, that even though Euphoria is a hit in the big sense, I think Euphoria is as big as it is because it came first.
Yes.
Or came first in this cycle.
And
I think if it came in the middle, yes. I don't think it's a hit. But Kendrick has now released 3 non-hits.
Mm-hmm.
3 non-hits.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so if you're on Drake's side, you may say, okay, maybe he got one. Maybe he got one conceptually.
Right.
Maybe he's saying all these terrible things about Drake, and maybe it's hitting some sad pressure points or whatever.
Yep.
But he can't make a hit.
Yeah.
And Kendrick is just sitting there like,
Yep. Sunday rolls around.
Oh, man.
Saturday rolls around. Man, this all happened.
I've lived 100 lives since this thing started. Saturday rolls around, and Kendrick finally loads up the mustard beat, and Not Like Us comes. And this is actually, if you're going to play chess with someone, you have to be savvy enough to plot out not one move, not 2 moves, not 3. You have to see the entire playing field. You have to understand what could come if the pachinko goes into the least likely corner. And I think in Drake's mind, the least likely corner is that Kendrick has a hit, like an actual hit, like mm-hmm. a popping record.
Mm-hmm.
This is a popping record.
Yeah, Kendrick flipped the board.
Yes.
And he hit a dance.
So there's Chance. There's like Chance Along, OV Ho, like Freaky Ass. Da, da, da. Like there's just like.
He's doing Draco's flow over a mustard beat, which is its own rap genius page somebody else can dissect.
Yes. Doing kind of what Drake would do. And it's you know, like, what is a hit anymore? But it's like, it's catchy. This is the thing. Like, Kendrick has had catchy records in the past, but it's not exactly what people love Kendrick for. He'll have the occasional thing. And if you're in LA long enough and listen to LA radio long enough, you will think Kendrick has a lot of catchy hits. But the minute you leave LA, no other part of the country plays Kendrick the way that LA plays Kendrick. This is just like a legitimate, like, this could get played on Hot 97.
Even though it's the most LA song maybe of Kendrick's career.
Yes, but it could, but because it's just fundamentally a very lightly toned, catchy record.
And
that's the thing. Yes. Drake, the thing that Drake didn't anticipate, is he made Kendrick a hit maker. He made Kendrick make a danceable, quote unquote, pop record that maybe it's not the kill shot. Maybe it's not the one that's the most damaging to Drake, but it exists because of all those other kill shots.
And I would even argue that, in fact, it might be, because it is the most, it is the Drake is a predator. Drake likes underage girls, unverified. But it takes the meme, the Drake meme mm-hmm. of the last 5 years. Drake mm-hmm. has already referenced this on an album. You know, why are people making these jokes about me? I dare you to make them to my face. And it takes a serious accusation and it does the thing that I'm asking for out of a rap beef, which is that it makes them funny. Mm-hmm. It makes them light. It makes it's playground insults.
You can sing along to it
and
try to strike a chord. I mean, you know, you sing along to it. He makes it the kind of money lines are the most damaging,
and
even though they're familiar territory.
And he did it right after the Meet the Grams coup. From there, Drake had to respond on Sunday with the Heart Part 6. He had to. He couldn't, like, if he bowed out again like he did after Sorry of Adidon, after getting mm-hmm. back-to-backed and then stomped on, mm-hmm. and then his big record getting stomped on, and then a victory lap, and then we just never heard from Drake again, I think his career might be actually damaged. He came back.
It's a little over protesty, this record.
The Heart Part 6.
Yeah. It's, you know, as we mentioned a little bit earlier, it sounds fatigued. It sounds like someone who, there was probably a clever way to respond to it, but this is somehow too fast. You can tell he's caught flat-footed. This is not something that's been in the tank. This hasn't been on the hard drive for a week.
No, it's all this feels response fresh. To what happened the previous
it feels
48
fresh.
Hours.
And it could have used, it's not as artful as most Drake records. Like, this is the thing about Kendrick. Kendrick can do a sort of like unstructured song, but he does it in an artful way. And the people who are into unstructured rap think that it's genius. Drake isn't like that. Drake is a king of structure. And when you listen to this, you're like, this isn't as tight as it should be. You could get away with this subject matter, but this is not as tight as it could be.
See, and I actually thought Drake was going to go in a different direction. I thought, Not Like Us, put the fight back on Drake's turf by making it fun again
after
Meet the Grams. I thought if Drake would have come back with punchlines on the level of Not Like Us, just jokes, just bars and jokes over a fun beat, it might have been closer. But the fact that he went once again to the grave stuff, to the I'm not a predator.
Do you think he could have done similar subject matter over a bouncy beat?
Yeah, I think if he would have gone zingers, it would have ended on a different note. Maybe if he would have gone zingers, Kendrick would have came back with whatever else he has in the chamber and we would still be hearing songs. Look, it's Monday afternoon. We might still get a Kendrick song today.
We're turning into a Kendrick song tomorrow.
Yeah, like stay on stream.
We're sleeping here today.
Yeah. But I thought by going so serious again, you know, I talked to my mother, quite a strange misread of Kendrick's song Mother I Sober, which seemed very un-Drake. Even again, if he wants to make, he could have made that point. It's a distasteful point. He could have made that point in a different tone, but he made it in quite a somber tone. You said it didn't seem defeated, but you know, he's sighing at the end. He's saying, hey, this was great exercise. Good luck with your album.
It also makes me wonder about back channel stuff.
Yeah.
Because roughly around the same time that this comes out, Punch goes on Twitter and is like,
from TDE.
It's great battle. Good for the culture. Or maybe it was Top. Both of them, I think. Both. Okay. Good for the culture, which is like kind of their way of being like,
white flag was
ceasefire.
Was waved.
You know, yeah. And like, I think, it makes me think that there won't, you said you think there's another move from Kendrick. Actually don't know if that's going to be the case, or at least not in this immediate
time frame. He could be holding fire.
Could be holding fire. Yeah.
Look, this is my main takeaway. Both these guys are going to put out absolutely massive next albums.
Probably this summer.
Kendrick's certainly sooner than Drake. Mm-hmm. If I were Drake, you know, we always say this, like, take a breather. A lot of big artists could
stand abide by
it. Yeah, could take some time off.
Okay.
He's put out albums in the wake of these kinds of things before, Scorpion, and so on and so on. But no matter what they do next, it's going to be, it extended their careers.
Okay. So then I want to talk about this on two levels before we kind of like tie it all together. Where does this competition leave Kendrick the musician, and where does it leave Drake the musician, and then where does it leave Kendrick the person, and where does it leave Drake the person? Start with musician. Your take is big albums coming. Kendrick is on a higher plane than he was 2 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago or whatever it is, and they both come back really strong and really big.
Kendrick's approval rating before and after this beef feels near 100%. To me, I just think this is actually an interesting thing. Call Drake whatever kind of culture vulture, appropriative, you know, white boy, whatever you want to call him. I think Kendrick welcomes more people into discussing hip hop openly. You see a lot of people tuning into this beef and offering commentary who I don't think would be there if it was Drake and Schoolboy Q.
Yeah, I mean, it's like you talk like
Drake. Kendrick is the I don't listen to hip hop but artist of our lifetime.
They both, I think, have significant white fan bases, but I think they're different white fan bases.
Drake, because Drake makes pop songs and people know those songs. Drake is like wallpaper to people. He's just part of the air. Kendrick has fans across
demos. And I also do think, generally speaking, the nature of Kendrick fandom is like, I'm smarter than blank, 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 dot, 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 whatever.
Sure.
And it could be a number of things filling that. That's the nature of it. And I think that there's a certain kind of fan who really wants to feel that way.
Yep.
And often that fan is an outsider
sure.
or like coming from a totally different place. And it's like, I've identified like the quote unquote smartest thing.
Right.
That's a real phenomenon.
So I think
they're different levels of fans.
Kendrick, bigger, more respected than ever. His last album, as J. Cole pointed out, quite a difficult listen. And I don't hear a lot of people
talking
about Mr. Morale going back and being like, oh,
to me at the time, Mr. Morale felt like an album that was deliberately put out to undermine the pre-existing Kendrick narrative. And it felt like it did that on a musical level and also on a word for word level. It was like, I'm going to make songs about how I don't wish to be the person that you have said I am. And also those songs are going
to
be
hard,
frankly,
to listen to.
Less catchy.
Yeah.
And with
some exceptions.
Yeah. You know, and also less catchy.
Like, or whatever.
Even like you could say like Pimp a Butterfly is like not catchy, but it's like, it's artful.
Yeah.
It's different. It's like a profound statement of art. Mr. Morale is less that, but I think by design, to me, I agree with you as far as where Kendrick stands now. I think Drake maybe misunderstood Kendrick's silence as weakness.
Mm-hmm.
And I think thought like, oh, this guy's off the grid and he wants nothing. He doesn't want smoke.
And he says that at the end of the Hard Part 6. He's like, I'm glad I could get you rapping for your fans. It's like Kendrick put out a long EP or a short album about Drake in the last week.
Absolutely. And he should honestly put it on stream for all that stuff. But to me, what this does for Drake is, I don't know. Because the thing is, like, when you are the one versus 20, and 20 come for you, even if you take an L, you're still the one.
Yeah.
I don't think anything's happened that makes him not the one.
I agree. I think, and I think the jokes are louder. The Drake detractors who existed, who we've heard from every album since More Life, you know, I think that's still there, and the jokes aren't going away. This doesn't like clear the air. But I think what it does do is, one of the things that many people complain with about Drake is that his subject matter is stale. I think this gives him a new round of subject matter. Will it be fruitful, or will it still be everyone's coming for me because I'm at the top and it's really hard and I'm isolated in my mansion? Like, maybe, but I do think there's going to be some motivation here. We're not going to hear him rapping obliquely about Kanye anymore.
Okay. Drake, age 37. Kendrick, age
almost 37.
36. Rick Ross, age 48. Future, age
42.
40.
40.
ASAP Rocky, age
30, who cares?
35.
Sorry.
That's okay. Kanye, age 46.
Yeah.
Okay. What those numbers have in common is that they're much, much older than 25, right? Yeah. And so this to me feels actually like a big commentary on rap generations.
Mm-hmm.
And you really start to see who is invested and who's staying home. Who's staying home? Lil Baby staying home.
21 Savage.
21 Savage staying home.
Staying home.
There's a number of people who see a 5 to 10 year runway of their career in front of them who want no parts of this. I don't know what they're doing behind the scenes, but like publicly they want no parts of this.
Lil Durk.
Absolutely. Nowhere to be found. Nowhere to be found. I'm very struck by how, and I think we talked a little bit about Jay-Z and Nas previously. I don't know what their ages were during that battle, but I think it was younger than this.
Mm-hmm.
They still had a lot of career in front of
them. A lot. The biggest parts of Jay's career certainly
were in front of him. I don't know. If this battle never happens, are the biggest years of Drake and Kendrick's career in front of them?
Definitely not.
But now, it's possible. And also, I mean, this is something I feel like people, you see a talk on Twitter a little bit. Where's the next generation of superstars, or the next generation of superstars? Like, if it's Lil Baby in 21 or Dirk, that's one level. If it's the generation where everybody passed away, that's, you know, it's like you don't have a counter narrative. I'm actually really, really curious to see how rappers who are 20 to 25 are going to maybe try to capitalize on this moment. Like, maybe there's an opportunity to do something that brings people together and that tells a different version of where the genre is going, because these are ultimately mid to late career rappers relitigating stuff that they've been litigating in some form or another, on record or off,
for more than a decade.
For more than a decade. And we're still talking about it.
The answer, Sexy Red dancing with Zach Bryan on stage. Like, that's the thing that's going to bring us all together.
On Twitter, though, apparently not everyone
was
people,
happy about
that.
Some
people were mad, but
crazy thing to be upset about.
But Sexy Red on stage with Zach Bryan, maybe that's how we should go.
That's peace.
That's peace.
I'm Emily Badger. I'm a reporter with the New York Times. Since the pandemic, empty office buildings have become much more common in many cities. Why can't we just turn them into housing? It's actually a really complicated question. To answer this question, you have to find a developer trying to turn an office building into apartments, ride a rickety elevator to the 30th floor of a construction site to see the interior guts of a building, find an expert in incandescent light bulbs who can explain to you how they fundamentally change office buildings. And that's just the beginning of what you have to do. When you subscribe to the New York Times, you are sending reporters like me out into the world to ask questions of dozens of different experts, to go and visit places most people don't get to go, to try to come back with answers, and then turn all of that into something that anyone can understand. If you'd like to become a subscriber, head to nytimes.com/subscribe. You need to see the animated floor plans in this piece.
Welcome back. It's Popcast Deluxe. It's John.
It's Joe.
No songs this week.
We covered a lot of songs.
We covered so many songs, like the full album of what we just talked about. Someone should box set that like 5 to 10 years from now.
The Drake Kendrick Lamar beef, including the songs that are not available.
Yes, including the Cole record and everything. Yeah. The original version of
Push-ups.
Yeah. But no songs this week. It's been a little bit of a dud week, candidly. Dua Lipa fans. We regret to inform you. But obviously, we're going to do Snack. We're going to do Snack a little bit different because sometimes when we're talking, Joe and I have a lot of things on our mind that we don't get to talk about on Deluxe. So Snack of the Week is going to be Snack Chat. Maybe this week only, maybe forever, TBD. But there are a few things that I've been sort of wanting to talk about that we haven't really had a spot for. So we're going to tear into these snacks this week, but we're going to chit chat not just about how chewy these cookies are. I hope one of them's probably stale, regrettably. That's on me. But also just a couple things that have been on our minds, what we've been up to the past few days, what's been distracting us when we haven't been glued to the Twitter For You feed to watch people argue about Kendrick and Drake, which for a person who is on leave that consumed way too much of my time.
There was a lot of posts.
Tough time, yeah. Last 48 hours. All right, what are our snacks?
All right, we have two foreign Chips Ahoy.
Okay, so I bought both of these. I'm pretty sure I bought them at the same exotics place. I have a good exotics place now. I went there with Karen once, which is when I got the one that's a grape apparently.
Flavor. Yeah.
And then I went the other day. I was in the area and I got this, which is a rose pink salt cookie, I guess.
Beautiful, beautiful package.
Great packaging. The thing that I'm really concerned about is the one I got with Karen was a few months ago. And frankly, they still had some of them.
Okay.
When I went last.
What do you think generally about a fruit flavored cookie or a flour flavored cookie?
Yeah. Flour is okay.
Okay.
Flour is okay. Fruit, I'm not happy with.
Yeah.
So let's start with, we're going to start with the good one.
All right.
Okay.
While I tear into these.
Yeah. Do you want to?
What's on your mind?
Okay. The thing that I feel like I would have spent time either writing about or thinking about the past few days, if the Drake Kendrick thing had not popped off. I've been having a lot of fun looking at the TikTok account for Marc Jacobs.
Okay. Never done that once in my life.
Okay. So the Marc Jacobs TikTok account has been very, very aggressively doing relatively lo-fi videos with immediate viral stars.
Must wear Marc Jacobs. I have Marc Jacobs on. Mike, you don't have any Marc Jacobs on. I told you you needed to wear some.
Oh, that's my bad. Sorry.
Come on, man. You know I always got extra.
Thanks, bro.
Got you with this, too.
Sick.
Now we're ready.
Like people who are like the TikTok Riz Party kids.
So like us next week.
We're here. The TikTok
Riz. Okay, these are not the Chips Ahoy I was expecting.
What? What?
They're
Is there
mini.
A chip?
They're mini.
Is there a hoy? It's a Chips Ahoy with neither chip nor hoy.
These are about the size of a quarter for our listeners, our non-viewers. Man. Go to youtube.com/popcast
right. Well, I'm already disappointed.
The size of this pink cookie. And yeah, they come in a package.
Pink cookies like, pink cookies in a plastic bag getting crushed by buildings. Those who know, know.
That's what this is.
That is what this is.
Okay.
So anyway, I feel like obviously most people who do TikTok.
Tastes like perfume. Sorry, go on.
That's all right. Most people who do TikToks, most brands who do TikToks do these like incredibly labored like influencer collaborations or whatever. It's sort of refreshing to keep the people who are viral in their milieu and then just like throw a Marc Jacobs thing into that milieu.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's a girl, Irene Lee, who does these kind of like almost like extemporaneous, hippie-ish,
not eating
weirdo.
A third one of these, okay. By the way.
Weirdo speaking thing, direct to camera, real like Gavin Wyland hours.
You know what they say, an apple a day keeps the doctors away. But overall, today's been great. The sun's out. I was a monster at work. Emails were flying. I had aux. I played jazz. Shout out Alice Coltrane.
And then it's just like one of those, but it's on the Marc Jacobs channel, and she's wearing a bag or something.
Okay.
The TikTok Riz Party kids go to a party. Wearing Marc Jacobs. There's something about, you saw
it's
the
like
thing.
Native
extremely native.
Right. And this, not Spawn.
Not at all. No. It's just really smart. They also, a few months ago, like they were doing things where like Uzi was in their office, like dancing on the desk, and Twigs was in the office. And it's just like how do we make videos that make sense in this milieu, not make videos that are marketing videos that fit on TikTok?
They just have like a really ambitious intern.
No, it's, I mean, I think it's Ava, who Ava had made, used to make clothes. Like she did those Champion, the Sea Champion sweatshirts, oh, yeah, like back in the day. Just someone who I think like understands the medium and like pays attention. Now I'm going to eat these. They don't even smell good.
No, I mean, tastes like perfume. 100%.
This is a huge letdown.
Yeah. This is not... This is only exists for the beautiful box.
Box is 10 times better than the cookie.
Yeah.
This is an epic letdown.
Yeah.
I wonder if these are expired.
I don't think they're expired. I think they just...
Oh, they're expired.
How expired are they? Read that date to the people. Okay, yeah, these are expired in 2023. All right, okay.
Podcast Deluxe live from the emergency room, live from City MD.
Okay, but I'm breaking into the grape.
That's a real chip cookie. Soy.
It's a real cookie. It's chewy. Did you know it was going to be chewy?
No.
It's definitely a chewy variety.
Oh, yeah, because when I did the Google Translate on it, it says soft.
Yeah, soft.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's chewy, has little like raisins on it.
You think basically. It's expired?
Doesn't matter.
Okay. So anyway, I was like spending a lot of time on that this weekend. Also, I saw Challengers this weekend.
Any Marc Jacobs in Challengers?
I don't believe so, but a lot of product placement.
I was
like
say,
a rather shocking for a film where you're like an artful filmmaker made this. It's like, no, literally like Disney made this film. Like, you know, it's like there's a product shot in almost every single shot.
Mm-hmm.
The budget must have been huge with all the product placement. Are we going to talk about Challengers on a future episode? Should I save it?
We might.
Anyway, the short read, the TLDR, good, but not in the ways I thought it was going to be good. In the ways I thought it was going to be good, actually not good. True story, Challengers is a comedy. It's not. But it's like it's like slapstick.
Yeah.
It's slapstick. It's not.
Not like, subtle.
No, it's not fun. It's not like funny, sexy comedy. Mm-hmm. It's slapstick.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch the movie, you'll know what I'm about to be doing.
Do you think Zendaya is funny?
No. That's it. I don't have dough.
Is she the straight man, or she's trying to be funny?
It's a crazy way to phrase it. No, she's not funny. The guys maybe are meant to be funny.
Right.
I would love to see some. You know, sometimes people would do like alternate trailers on the internet. I would love to see someone do a trailer for this film, but as if it was like an Adam Sandler movie,
right?
Or like a Will Ferrell movie, because there's enough material.
It should be Zendaya, Adam Sandler, and Will Ferrell. These are delicious, actually.
These are also stale.
They don't taste stale to me, though. You know what's really good? You take a chewy Chips Ahoy, a soft Chips Ahoy, and you put it in the microwave.
Oh, yeah.
That's a classic. This doesn't have any chocolate, so it wouldn't.
Oh, these are more expired than as the well. Other ones.
Oh, but they hold up.
Again, till the hospital episode. To me, the Naplu Ultra of cookie is a chewy Chips Ahoy with pieces of a regular Chips Ahoy with pieces of Reese's peanut butter cups in it.
Right.
Not the Reese's Pieces one. Mm-hmm. The Reese's peanut butter
Not cups like, one. You're not making this at home. Like
No, this is commercially available.
Yeah. I've had those. Yeah. Great.
Those are incredible. Mm-hmm. Like murder a bag of those. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Okay. This is better than the other one.
Definitely.
I don't like it, though. But what? Tell me a little bit about something you did this weekend.
I mostly watched the end of the first round and the beginning of the second round of the NBA playoffs.
I've heard of those.
Is honestly the drop off between the two rounds is really sudden. And all of a sudden you go from three games a day to like maybe one. And it's like a real whiplash because the first round of the NBA playoffs is like.
You watch all the games?
Yeah, basically, if I can. Yeah. Or I record them and I watch most of them. I mean, nowadays I watch them at home.
Right.
Okay. And I watch them on YouTube TV, so you can skip around. And actually, this is what I wanted to say even more than any of the games, which I think will be lost on you, my commentary about the Knicks and the Orlando Magic.
All I know is Jalen Brunson and then putting the jersey on the Wilt Chamberlain statue, which seems rude.
We should just play like 2 seconds from the latest Side Talk video because they're still doing it and it works every time, even though the shtick might be tired. Like Knicks fans
deliver.
Great content.
Joel Embiid, come take these hands, bitch!
Skipping ahead, watching the game on a slight delay, so you can skip most of the commercials, has become invaluable.
Okay.
Because there's three commercials with three songs that play basically every commercial break, and they're driving the nation collectively insane.
I know this from Twitter, obviously. Right. What a Pro Wants.
What a Pro Wants. So this is starring two of the young players from the Oklahoma City Thunder. Great team.
Shea.
Great organization. Shea Gilgeous-Alexander.
Best dressed in the NBA.
Yeah.
Yeah.
By far. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Shout out Shea. Shout out 4G.
Picking up the baton from...
Shout out Justin Reed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Chet Holmgren. And they do the bit where they sing the Christina Aguilera song that almost definitely neither of them had ever heard
prior to being
hired for this commercial. Like, yes. I think literally they were not born, you know,
or
they were not cognizant.
Yeah.
When that song came out.
What a pro wants, what a pro needs, whatever makes me happy sets me free.
So that's one. I actually mind that one the least.
Yeah, I watched it. I watched it because people were so mad about it. And I was like, I was ready to be mad about it. And maybe I'm just not invested enough in
basketball. And you just haven't seen it every single commercial break.
But it seemed fine to
weeks
me.
On end.
Like, it seemed plausibly dumb.
Well, the other one that, which is tough because it's an amazing song, is that there's a Wingstop commercial that uses No Flex Zone.
No flex zone. Hey. No flex zone. Hey.
And my ringtone.
You have a ringtone?
I mean, my alarm tone. My alarm tone. My morning alarm.
Okay. Incredible.
Literally.
So you hear it as often as...
I hear it every day.
Yeah. Again, great song. Actually, a good commercial. It's like, weirdly, it's about like the crunch of the chicken while a family is playing Jenga. But they play No Flex Zone.
They play it reworded, or it's just they just play No Flex Zone?
They just play No Flex Zone. And they...
Ray Schremer came to the New York Times. They came, I have a picture
you have
of them
in this
by
building.
The fourth floor elevator.
The best thing that came out of that is Bill Simmons tried to sing the song from memory on his podcast.
I did not see that.
We'll just play like 2 seconds.
Okay.
No way. Oh, yeah, that song.
And then there's this other song. I guess it's a LaKaylee 47 song.
Okay.
And
if you say so.
Yeah, it's about posting a picture on Instagram.
Hit that pose, hit that flip, check your angle, post that, hit that pose, hit that flip.
It's
an ad for who?
It's an ad for like photo editing phone.
CapCut?
Like a Google thing.
No,
I think it's a Google phone or something. It's like it's a horrible commercial. It's a guy editing himself to make it look like he's throwing his baby higher in the air than he actually is at the beach. I'm like, don't do that. Yeah, don't do that.
Don't do that. What agency, what brand agency told you that was a good idea?
Terrible. Maybe I should write this for the newspaper. I just wonder if streaming is going up on these songs or if streaming is going down
because
on these
people
songs.
Are rejecting.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Like it might be anti-discovery, rejection.
Yeah. Okay.
So those are my anti songs of the week. Sorry to Ray Schremmerd.
And sorry to my morning alarm.
And sorry to these cookies because they're not very good.
What's a number on these?
The rose salts. It's like that's a 1 out of 10.
It's yeah. Okay. I'm going to say 2. It's a 2 out of 10. And I'm going to say these grape cookies are, I think for me, it's a 4.5.
Yeah. I was going to say 5. I think the plus side of a grape cookie being expired is that a raisin is already an expired grape. So it's like, it's fine.
Damn.
It works.
Where else are you getting these takes for Podcast Deluxe? That's our show. We'll be back next week. YouTube.com/podcast, like and subscribe. NYTimes.com/podcast is where every episode lives on the website. See you around.